Hey, welcome to WGN. This is Michael Heidemann and
Esmeralda Leon.
Hey, what's going on, Esmeralda?
Nothing. This show. We have never hosted together.
No, I'm excited. This is the first time. This is the first outing to it. I'm very excited.
Don't mess it up.
I texted my dad earlier. I said, Dad, you know, we're going to be on. I'm going to be on. Usually I'm on with Kevin Richter from Sound Sessions.
Mm-hmm. Your podcast as well.
The podcast.
WGNplus.com.
That's right. Thanks.
Helping you out.
Little shout out there. And you're usually on with either John Hansen or a million other people.
Yeah. They put me with anybody, which is good, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I work well with others.
You do.
Yeah.
You're kind of like the jack of all trades when it comes to hosting on WGN.
I'm a good helper.
Mm-hmm.
I set it up, or what do you do
and
in volleyball?
I spike it down.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for setting me up.
Yeah.
Goodbye to Shantae. Oh, yes. Man. So many great things going on tonight. We have our producer, Camille, in the booth. What's going on, Camille?
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Never worked with Camille either. This
I'm
is
brand
a first.
New. Brand spanking new.
This is like your second time, right? Third?
Maybe.
Fourth?
It's been 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've been here and there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's been
very
good.
Right on.
Your old hat now.
Yeah. You're set.
Basically a professional.
Yeah. No, we're all professionals here. We're all grown-ups.
We're trying, at least. And speaking of brand spanking new, what's going on, Roger Badish, in the newsroom?
Speaking of old guys,
the old hat. We're like, we're grown-ups. And
yeah.
Roger's like, how Gramps long have you been
here.
Doing that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, let's see. I did it. I started doing radio in 1966.
Oh, my goodness.
Man.
Yeah, no, you've got us beat.
Yeah.
By a long shot.
By a couple of years.
Yeah, just a few. I started in 68, but, you know, whatever.
What?
I know. I look very young for my age.
Yeah, you were in the old-time radio hour.
Yeah, I literally was, yes.
Hey, happy 4th of July, Roger.
Thank you. You too, guys.
Thank you so much.
I hope that you've got some good things planned for your Tuesday. Who's working? Raise your hands. Who's working on Tuesday?
I am.
You are?
Yes.
Yeah, but after all the fun stuff, right?
Before and after.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm
that's right. Yeah.
I'm in the morning
and then
at night.
Yeah.
Yes, no.
Okay. Well, you still get some fun stuff.
Yeah,
there.
No, I get the daytime.
Yeah, that'll be good.
I get to sleep.
Actually, I'm doing the same thing. I'm in for Rob.
Well, there you go.
Monday night.
Very good.
Into Tuesday morning. But then I got to get up early for the parade.
Yes.
On Tuesday, so.
In your fancy suit.
My fancy suit, finally.
Have you seen this, Michael?
Roger, are you wearing a suit?
He's got a 4th of July suit.
Yeah, I bought a special suit. I used to wear a seersucker, blue and white stripe sport coat, and I would either alternate blue pants and a red shirt or blue pants and a blue shirt with a red tie, and if I had the red shirt, I'd wear a blue tie.
But now he's gone next level.
Yeah, I now have a dark blue with white stars. Sport jacket, red slacks, a light blue shirt with a red and white tie.
You are 4th of July.
Color coordinated to a T. Yeah.
Hang me up on a pole and let me flap in the wind.
Oh, boy.
I think that was the motto of the parade.
Yeah, it is.
You're going to be doing the Skokie parade with Patty Vasquez,
that's
Dave
right.
Kaplan, the whole A-team.
Yeah.
Surprise, Roger, we're hanging you up on a pole.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. No one told you.
Well, this is a great weekend. There's a lot of great things going on. The weather is impeccable.
Are you
it's
kidding
phenomenal.
Me? There was clouds today, and they weren't dark.
I saw three clouds today, and they were all pitch
they were
perfect.
Gorgeous. There's like out of a movie.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic weekend, and this is like what I'm so excited about. Like, this is the reason why we all live in Chicago, is for these great holiday weekends.
Yes.
No snow, no rain. We're finally getting to
that'd
like,
be frightening
great
if there was snow.
Oh, my gosh.
I would mean, no, I don't think I would be
That'd
here.
Be like
I'd be in
Armageddon.
A basement somewhere hiding.
There'd
what
be
did
like
you?
Alarms.
Yeah. No, there would be. What did you do on this fine day?
So today was a pretty lax day because I know we had the show tonight. So I was prepping for that, which was took up a lot of time. And then I tried to take a little nap. But I was so gamed up, and I could not fall asleep.
Yeah, and you're usually from 11 to 2 a.m.
Yeah, so let's give a rundown of like who
so
we are.
So this is not your, it's sort of your time zone, but not really.
I live the vampire life. I'm much like Edward from Twilight because I only wake up in like the middle of the night.
You sparkle in the sunlight too?
I often do. My skin is pale white most of the time because I never see the daylight. But I'm Patty Vasquez's producer. Mm-hmm. So you can hear me every night from 11 to 2 in the morning, as well as you do traffic during that time as well.
Yes, I'm from 10 to 5 a.m.
Dang.
10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Yeah, with Patty and Nick. So a little bit of Justin.
A little bit of Justin too?
A little bit there.
Mm-hmm. And what time do you fall asleep then?
I try.
Mm-hmm.
6, 7.
Oh, six,
but sometimes,
seven.
Sometimes I'm really bad and I stay up late, quote unquote late.
Well, you have to take your beautiful pictures of downtown Chicago in the early morning hours.
Right. Well, that's just me wandering and then
wait,
I see
wandering?
Something.
What, do you got lost?
Well, sometimes.
On the way home.
Sometimes, because I'm like, I'm going to take a different route.
There you go.
And then it's like, oh, that bus isn't running. Okay. I have to walk much farther than I thought. Great.
Mm-hmm. I'm trapped now in Chicago. Yeah. I don't know where I'm
going. So, speaking of lost, I came upon this article, and it's adorable, and I'm going to share it on my Facebook page, and I hope you do too, Michael, and I hope you put it on the WGN one.
Okay, what is it? What's going on?
A man found a teddy bear at O'Hare, and he wants to return it to the owner. Aww. How adorable is that? And it's the cutest little thing. He posted it on Facebook. It's Nathan Paul Childers, and he posted it, and he's made it his travel buddy until he can reunite the teddy bear to its owner. And he's asking people to share it, and he's adding the hashtag #FindMyHuman.
Okay, so
how cute is that?
That is the most adorable thing in the entire world.
And I want to help him.
Did he? And they lost it at O'Hare?
Yes, they lost it at O'Hare. It was June 25th, around noon on Sundays, where he found it. So if you know... And the, oh, he named the teddy bear.
He renamed it.
He renamed it until he finds the owner, Theodore.
Okay. What it, Theodore.
Right. I mean, that makes sense.
That's
teddy, you know.
Easy go-to.
But I'm going to share it on my page. Hopefully somebody will know whose teddy bear this is because it's too cute. And you know there's a little boy or girl just like crying and bawling their eyes out that their teddy bear is gone.
I was going to say it's going to be really, really disappointing when he sees that the teddy bear is part of like a 53-year-old man's like collection.
No.
He's like, I've been looking for that everywhere. Thanks for finding it.
What I find weird is, well, I hope people are just honest. And they go, yeah, no, that is my kid's teddy bear or whatever.
Yeah.
But like someone might be like, it's mine. Mm-hmm. And it's not really theirs. I would hope not.
No, you have to be some kind of monster to not, to not say
that's
that.
That's it. You're a monster if you say this is yours and it's not. No, but I'm going to share it on my Facebook.
That's a good idea.
And hopefully it will get. It's getting far.
Yeah, isn't that
people are sharing it.
Isn't that an amazing thing, the fact that we can share so many things on the internet now, and it's like it becomes like this viral sensation. It just makes me think about the guy who wanted to get the retweets to get free chicken nuggets from Wendy's.
I think this is a more nobler cause. But I mean, cool.
I mean, nuggets are pretty
noble.
Yeah,
people want to eat.
They're noble nuggets.
I would hope he would share.
If he gets them up for free his entire life, he has to be—he has to be sharing those. He has to be the most popular kid in his high school. But he did this because of the internet, and now we're able to share like and find these lost teddy bears like with anybody you want. How nice!
It's all the teddy bears, all the lost teddy bears of the world.
What's this guy's name?
Nathan Paul Childers.
Okay.
So I'm going to share it, and then hopefully, you know, you all share it on your Facebooks. So then we can get this teddy bear back.
Well, you know,
to its rightful owner.
This is so cool. Well, you know, what's the craziest thing that you've ever lost and you know have brought back to you before? I can think of a few things that I've been.
I'll have
through.
To think about it. But I told you asked me earlier, and what I found, and it was most exciting to me recently was a $5 bill on the ground.
Wow.
On
slow
the CTA.
Clap.
Yeah,
slow.
No, it was. I was very happy.
That's great. So, you know what? Let's take some calls. Camille, I want to know what you've found in your whole life too. You look very amped up to think about this right now. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say. So give us a call at 312-981-7200. We want to know, like, what have you lost and found? Because, you know, there's a lot of great things that. By losing things, you know, you find yourself a little bit.
Oh, it's a journey.
I thought that I'd you know, bring it around a little bit. So give us a call, 312-981-7200. We have so many awesome things going on during the show.
We do.
And
just finding teddy bears.
No,
we have a few guests. Fun things.
We have Max Deutsch coming up at 2:30. We have our good friend Eduardo from the Rito Fest.
Oh, you even rolled your R, man.
Thank you. I've been practicing all day for this moment. At 4 o'clock, from the Museum of Failures, like we talked with Carl about, we have Dr. Sam West, who's joining us by phone, all the way from Sweden, real?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Oh, my gosh. This is going to be fantastic. And then, of course, at 4:30, we have This is History, and that's going to be our segment with Dave Schwann. It's going to be a fantastic show. Ezra, what do you think about taking a break right now?
Yes.
Okay, we'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to WGN 720. This is Esmeralda Leon
and hey,
Heidemann.
Yeah, this is Mike. What's going on, Esmeralda?
We're in for Dave Plyer.
Yes, we are.
His name isn't as exciting as Matt Bubala. Sorry, Dave Plyer, but it doesn't roll off the tongue like Matt Bubala.
It's always been one of my dreams to say the Matt Bubala phrase.
We can
with
say
you.
It if you want.
Okay, three, okay. Two, one. Matt Bubala. You and John. Your shows are fantastic, excited.
Yeah, we're just going to have a whole show one day where we just say people's names. We'll just go down the list. NPR, mm-hmm. This station, mm-hmm. All the radio stations. We'll just, it'll be like a, did you know how to say things?
Yeah. You know, name that I really like is Camille, our producer's name.
Oh, there you go. Camille.
Oh, stop.
Yes.
Producer Camille.
I have a hard last name to pronounce, though. It's Suknevich.
Suknevich.
Okay.
That's not. Oh, I like that. Camille Suknevich.
Yeah, it kind of like you're like on the NASCAR track and you think you're going to take a right and it takes a left right in front of you.
I know.
This is fantastic. All right, so let's bring it back. You know, we talked about this great story about a man had found this teddy bear at O'Hare, and he's looking for the owner, which is like the most noble thing you can do. It's selfless, it's beautiful, and it's a really good thing, especially if, you know, you're helping out these kids who... The one kid with the one teddy bear.
Probably one kid.
Or it's twins that need to share one. Tugging at
them. Oh, wow. That's quite a story.
I just added like a backstory that doesn't need to be added.
Because then you think like, oh, those twins, they only have one.
Yeah.
They should have two.
Come on, mom and dad.
And now they're gone.
Oh,
the one
geez.
Is gone. Oh, man. Okay.
Okay. It's a beautiful night outside tonight, and we're looking out in the Allstate Showcase studio windows. We're saying hi to everybody real quick. But we did want to know, though, losing something is really important because, like I said, you almost find yourself. And Esmeralda, you found $5
the other day. I found a $5
bill. How good did that make you feel?
Amazing.
Yes.
I mean, bad for the person who lost the $5.
Do you ever really think about those people, though?
No, not really. I mean, it's $5. And it's on you. What are you doing just dropping your money everywhere?
Yeah. There's one time when I found $50 on the ground, and I'm like, wouldn't you just – I'd have that, like, with gum attached to my pocket because I wanted to keep it so tight.
Oh, that would be a horrible situation for the person you give it to afterwards. It's just covered in gum.
Well, that's their problem now.
Keep it. Mm-hmm. Keep it safe. I did find 20 once, too. Oh,
really?
Yeah. No, it was exciting.
Oh, my gosh.
That Camille, was the highlight of my month.
What's the most you've ever found?
Money-wise?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not. I don't have good luck. So
you just have to put your head down a lot and just wander.
I have returned money though.
Okay.
Oh, really? How much?
I'm probably like, you know, $20 maybe.
Oh, because you saw them drop it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that's nice. I wouldn't take
karma.
Someone's
$20. You never know.
I remember that when Uber had just started, I had taken an Uber and I found $100 on the ground, like in the floorboards of the car. And I was just astonished because I was like, what am I supposed to do? Do I take this? Do I give it to the driver? It's obviously not theirs.
So what happened?
Yeah.
We kept some of the money and we said
some of it.
Yeah.
You broke $100? $100 bill?
We needed
change for that?
We asked the driver. We said, do you know who this... We found this money in the back. And he goes, I don't know what it is. I'm guessing that he didn't want anything to do with it.
Right.
So, I mean...
Yeah, that could be some shady money. You never know.
Yeah. I know. So we saw that. But but besides that, we're talking about losing things and the power of the internet and getting to spread that too, which is really cool.
I did... recently see, and I tried my hand at it. I try to be like a little mini detective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm signed up to this website called Everyblock, and it, you know, you can talk about your neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And you post stuff like you're selling things or dogs are lost and things. And someone lost a ring, a wedding ring, and they were in one of the parks around my neighborhood. And they posted like, I may have lost it from here to here in this park on the south side of the park, whatever, blah, blah, blah. $300 if someone finds it. So I went that morning I went to the park to go look for it. Cause I'm like, I want $300.
Yeah.
So I didn't find it.
But you
but still,
You had to find a tiny ring in a whole park.
Yeah, it was hard. And then the grass was all wet.
Ooh.
And then my feet got wet. My shoes got wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then my feet got wet. And then it was cold. And then I decided to quit.
You're like, screw this. It's not even worth it.
No, the grass was too dewy, so mm-hmm. everything was shining.
Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of people like searching for the same ring?
Could you imagine?
It was just like a Pokemon Go like kind of search where everyone just like searching on their phones and trying to find it.
I mean, people probably thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
Because I was just wandering back and forth at 6 a.m. in this soccer field.
In this dewy soccer field.
Yeah, I was like, no. I just wanted to be like, I'm just looking for a ring. Because people had dogs and they were just walking. I'm just wandering back and forth in a field. I didn't find anything, though. I was kind of hoping. But, mm-hmm. you know, it turned out okay. I didn't find the ring, but I did find a farmer's market, and I ate a crepe.
What, was this the other day?
Yes.
Okay, because mm-hmm. I remember you were talking about finding
that was my good thing.
See, this is what it comes down to. You found something even better than you were looking for.
Yeah. Well, I would have liked those $300. That would have been nice.
It would have been nice.
And give that person's ring back, whatever.
I love that that's like the second aspect of it all. It's just
I
like,
mean, whatever. Ring. They seemed very nonchalant in their post about losing a ring.
Yeah.
So,
you know, when I would always lose something, because this was a big thing in my family, my grandma had a really good connection to losing things and finding them. This was like a big important part of her life. And because mm-hmm. she was very, very religious.
Okay.
And she would often pray to this Saint Anthony, which is the patron saint of losing things.
Okay.
So every time that she would lose something, whether it be a ring, whether it be, I don't know, like a Nutri-Grain bar or whatever. I'm giving you the whole spectrum.
She would pray to St. Anthony
She'd
for
pray
it?
To St. Anthony, and she'd be able to find this item right away.
Wow. So she had a direct line, because you would think he'd be pretty busy.
She had a direct line to all sainthood.
She's like, I lost my Nutri-Grain bar, please, St. Anthony.
But he would all. But this is the thing, though. It worked 100% of the time, which is pretty crazy.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you need anything special?
No, I think you just ask.
You just go, hey, St. Anthony.
Yeah, you say, hey, St. Anthony, I need to find this, and you will most likely find it.
Oh.
You know, I think that it might just be, you know, you're because I feel like in your brain, somewhere closeted, you have this like thing where you know where you put the remote at the last time, or you know where you put your wallet, because obviously you saw it and you put it there, and it's just a matter of remembering it. So maybe it's just triggering, you know, your memory.
St. Anthony is?
St. Anthony's like, it jogs up the old brain.
I'm going to imagine that he literally goes, boop, with his finger, and goes, now you remember.
And now you found it. So you should have done that when you found that ring, or you were looking for it.
I should have.
You know, we actually have a call right here from our good friend Harold. What's going on, Harold? How are you doing today? Hold on, actually. Let me put you on the phone right there. What's going on, Harold? All right. let me just hold this real quick.
Oh,
there we go.
Wait.
What's going on, my friend?
Harold, there he is.
I was in the twilight zone. I got a story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. This is probably about 30 years ago. I bought a light meter for photography. It was top of the line. I bought it for like $375, and it was at that time worth about $550, and I bought it used. Mm-hmm. And had it for about 3 weeks. A friend of mine asked me if he can borrow it. I said, okay. So I went over to the bus stop, waited for the bus. I sat on a bench, and this older lady came, sat down next to me, and she was rambling. She was talking incoherently, and I'm like, I said, let me get up and go over here somewhere and mm-hmm. wait for the bus up. Bus shows up. I get on the bus. Pay my fare, and I start walking back, and I like reach for the light meter. I go, oh my God, I don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran back to the front of the bus, jumped off at the next stop, ran back, and got to the bus stop and the bench, and it wasn't there. And I'm like, oh my God, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it for about 3 or 4 years. And one day I'm at work, and my mom calls me, and she says, hey, I was at a garage sale, and I saw one of those light meters. And I go, yeah, I know. You see them always all there. They're like 70 years old, and I don't know how to use them. And, you know, they're good antiques, but they're not really good light meters anymore.
Yeah,
and
so it's like a popular item. We'd be able to find it at other garage sales then.
Right.
Okay.
She says, no. She says, this thing is pretty modern. And I says, really? She goes, yeah, it's LCD on there and everything. I go, okay. So the garage sale was going to happen the next day again. So I meet up with my mom. We're going to go to the garage sale. And we get there, and there's several garage sales in Zaley. There's maybe about 8 or 9 of them. We walk through all of them. Nothing.
Yeah.
And my mom said, there was a garage sale right here, but it's closed. And we asked the neighbor, and they said, oh, well, she's at church, but she'll open up later. Left our number, and mm-hmm. we went back home. The lady calls us like 12:30, 1 o'clock. So we go back, and I'm walking around, and she's got an oscilloscope for, I don't know, for working on cars. Mm-hmm. She goes, there it is. And I go, no, this is something you can put in your pocket. She goes, oh, I'll give you a good deal. I go, no, I don't want it. It's not what I'm looking for. And so we start, we're like, okay, let's go. And we start walking away, and I look into this garage on the corner, and I can see through the window as I walk by, somebody's walking around there, but the lights are out.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, there's somebody here in this garage. But she goes, no. She goes, forget it. Let's go. And I says, but I think they're going to put a garage. They're going to open their door and have a sale. She goes, no, let's go. But just then the door opens. My mom says, forget it. I want to go. She walks to her car. She had Lincoln. She opens the door in her car. She goes, let's go. And I said, no, wait. I mean, we could go ahead. She goes, I'm going. And I turn around and I walk back to the garage.
Yeah.
My mom closes the door. She starts walking back. And I walk there, and there's a laundry basket. And there's towels in there and stuff like that. And on top is a Minolta Autometer 3. Again, this is worth almost $600, mm-hmm. sitting right there. And it's missing a little thing you clip on there. And I said, how much is that? She goes, $5. I said, you take 3? She goes, don't bring it back if it doesn't work. She goes, it's yours if you buy it. And I says, okay, I'll give you $3. I had to replace that part, which was $16. And I says, where did you get it from? She goes, my mom brought it home. She says, nobody knows what it is. She had no idea. Mm-hmm. This was 4 miles from where I live. Mm-hmm. And it shows up at a garage sale.
Harold, that is the crazy, crazy kismet. What a climactic story. So you found the part that you had lost at a garage sale.
Well, the meter, the whole meter, yeah.
Right. The whole meter.
I got to tell you, that we're talking about 1986, 87. That would have, you know, that thing was worth about almost $600. Right now, these days, something of a similar item, similar money, you know, accounting for inflation, that thing's worth the grand.
Jeez,
and
man.
The lady was selling it for $5 because she didn't even know what it does.
Yeah. Wow. Harold, you know, that is insane, my friend. Because
although kind of a bummer because he had to repay money for it.
He had to repay some more money for it. But Harold, thank you so much for the call. I think that was the call of the night so far. I'd love to hear some more people, you know, call us. If you have any good, lost and found stories mm-hmm. throughout the night, give us a call. We have some great prizes to give away as well. We have a quick break to take before the news, so let's take that now, and then we'll get your news with Roger Badish in just a second.
You're listening to 720 WGN. I'm Esmeralda Leon, and here with Michael Heidemann.
Hey, Esmeralda.
You're studying.
Yes,
we're studying.
This is a vastly interesting, so I'm excited to get this next guest on.
Yes, so Mr. Max Deutsch, mm-hmm. he is the creator of the Month to Master app, and it's an app that helps you learn anything in 30 days.
Oh, gosh, do I need this?
We all need this. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking we all need this, right, Max?
I guess so. at least that's the idea.
So tell us what exactly is Month to Master?
Sure. So really the project Month to Master started just with myself. So it started mm-hmm. as a personal challenge to try to learn some expert level skill mm-hmm. Every month. And as I started doing that and blogging daily about that process, I received a lot of people reaching out asking if I could coach them in a one-on-one setting to help them master their own monthly learning pursuits. And slowly over time, I realized that I couldn't scale this one-to-one coaching over the phone or by text. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I built the app, which features an artificially intelligent version of myself or something like that, which has taken what I've seen from my coaching and the main generalizable patterns and try to deliver it so that anybody, as you said, could learn anything in 30 days.
Okay. So say I want to learn French. How would yes, that's all I know.
Bonjour.
How would I go about? Like what, how am I going to learn in 30 days?
Yeah. So the important thing to mention is the app isn't magic, right? So the app can't learn on your behalf.
Oh, man.
Darn.
You still will have to do the learning part, but the idea of the app is to try to remove all the friction throughout the rest of the process. And so in all the coaching that I've done so far, what I've found is that there are really two things holding people back from learning anything.
Okay.
And they're not actually specific to learning French or learning an instrument or anything like that. Really, it's just starting and remaining committed for some period of time, right? So you've probably wanted to learn French for maybe a while now. Maybe that was just an example, right? But talking to everyone about this project, it seems that everyone has something that they've always wanted to learn, whether that is a new language or a new instrument or learning how to draw and so on.
Yeah, for sure.
But oftentimes, because it's this ambiguous thing that's not well-defined, it's much more overwhelming than it needs to be. And as a result, most people never even get started or think that they're not a language person or they're not the kind of person that would be able to learn that thing. And so what the app tries to do is it helps right from the very beginning, it will help you find a measurable and trackable goal. So it'll help define what your goal is. So maybe not just learn French, but let's say you really want to learn, you want to hold a 10-minute conversation in French at a French restaurant, right? So you want to be able to order and so on. And so that gives you a framework to understand how do you know when you're done learning French? Because, you know, a language is infinite in its scale. So the app will help you first find a measurable goal. Mm-hmm. And then it will help you structure your monthly learning pursuit, right? So it will help you figure out how long you're going to practice for, when you're going to practice. You'll set up notifications, so you'll get those daily reminders and the motivation you'll need. And then also the app will help create accountability. So it will either ask you to use a friend as an accountability partner or share your challenge on Facebook, for example, for social accountability, or even if you want, pledge a certain amount of money so you have monetary accountability.
So how does that work? Like, where's that money going?
Yeah, so actually, the way it works, or the way I'm thinking about it right now, is similar to how you're prepaying for a gym membership, right? So for a number of reasons that I could get into a second, the money sort of disappears into the ether. So you're paying, you know, that amount of money as almost a commitment in the same way that you would pay for a gym membership or you would pay for a real coach, you know, a human coach or a class. And the idea is that by investing that amount of money, you're saying I want to get my money's worth now, and therefore I'm going to take this more seriously. So you can choose any of those options that resonate or make the most sense for you.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but the money one would – if I'm going to lose money if I don't learn this. Yeah, no, it's quite a motivator there.
So, Max, does the money go to you then? Or where is it going? I'm still trying to grasp this a little bit.
Yeah, so right now the money will go to me and invested back into the app. So there's a lot of capabilities that I want to continue to add to the app, and so and I say this, you know, as you pick that option, right? So you say if you do choose the money option, I'm very upfront, and I say, you know, this money, you're not going to get this money back. This is your way of you know, creating your accountability, and this money will then be invested back into the capabilities of the app. And so if that's cool with you, then you can choose that option, and if not, you can, you know, you're given the opportunity to pick something else.
Yeah, okay. I could see where that could be. I mean, if you're going to be trying to learn Spanish or something like that and you drop $1,000, you better darn well learn Spanish by the end of that month.
That's right.
And so in general, does the app cost any money?
So you can use the app completely freely. And so the answer is no.
Okay.
That's nice, unless you want to
drop
some because you can't. you know.
You got to push yourself a little bit. That's the carrot. You know, I've read about this, Max. It's such a cool thing to like bring because, you know, now it's all about how do we push ourselves and forward our own lives with technology. And I think this is a great way to do it. What was that first thing that you wanted to get done? Like what was the inspiration and the passion driving you behind this? Like was it that first, that conversation in France? French.
We need to learn French real bad.
I think I need to learn English first before I learn anything else. But what was that first thing that drove you? Like what was that first experience that you had with this app?
Yeah. So, for a very long time now, I've had a big list of things that I've wanted to learn, and I had casually tried to learn a few of these things, but really hadn't committed myself to learning any of them in an intense kind of way.
Yeah, I saw that you like had finished a Rubik's Cube in 17 seconds and learned some languages as well along the way?
That's right. So back in November, I declared that for a year, I would commit myself to 12 months of these monthly pursuits. And for my version of accountability, I said that, and I have been blogging daily about the process. So on the first of every month, I would say, you know, here's the new challenge for the month, and here's where I'm starting out at, you know, whether I have no experience or a little experience, and here's how I'm defining success, whether that's holding a 30-minute conversation in a foreign language or solving a Rubik's Cube in under 20 seconds or so on. And then throughout the month, I document my journey to try to accomplish that particular task.
Right on. It's so interesting. So what's your kind of your background, too, with this? Because, I mean, Esmeralda, I don't think that I could create my own app anytime soon.
Yeah.
I'd have to have
or
some
build
kind
a
of,
self-driving
like...
car. I saw that in your thing. I was like, oh, wow.
So you have like a great technological background. And what's your credibility here, Max?
Yeah, so I think there's two points of credibility, right? So on the technology front, I do have a day job. And so I think as a technologist, as a product manager and an engineer at a tech company out here in San Francisco, and I also run a app development company, so I, you know, build apps for clients and so mm-hmm. on. So I, you know, from a technology perspective, sort of what I get paid for is building apps and building software. So I have that muscle, but I think more importantly, the credibility comes in more from the learning angle, right? So, mm-hmm. And I think the proof is best seen not from any sort of credential, but really just from the results I've had so far. So. In the past 8 months, as you guys were alluding to, you know, other than just solving a Rubik's Cube in 20 seconds or holding a 30-minute conversation in a foreign language, in my case, I spoke Hebrew, I've also learned to draw realistic portraits and land a standing backflip and build a self-driving car and become a grandmaster of memory and a number of other things.
Yeah.
And I've documented the entire process from here's where I am right now, knowing almost nothing, to, you know, here's the last day of the month where I've either sharing a video of the 30-minute conversation in Hebrew or a video of the Rubik's Cube solving and so on. And so I think the proof really comes in, you know, demonstrating that, one, it is possible to learn these things using the system that is integrated into the app, and two, that I have the experience undergoing these challenges myself.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's it's amazing. We need to take a break. Can you hold on for us, Max?
Absolutely.
Perfect. So you're listening to 720 WGN, Mike, Esmeralda, and we'll be right back after this.
Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is Michael and Esmeralda Leon tonight.
Hello.
So great to see you, Esmeralda.
Yeah, you too.
You know what I like about you?
What's that?
That you're very ambitious.
Oh.
You have many things going for you. And we the great Max Deutsch. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. He has the Month to Master app, which is one of the coolest apps that I've seen in the last few months.
Yeah.
And it gives you the chance to do anything you wanted to do, whether it be learn a Rubik's Cube blindfolded, to learning a new language, learning how to dance, playing mm-hmm. guitar. I don't know, peeling a banana correctly, whatever you
what?
Want to do.
You don't know how to do that? We will teach you in 30 days,
they
right,
will
Max?
Teach you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The idea is that with the app, you can theoretically learn anything in 30 days.
Right on. And I think that's very cool. And it's a very good thing for people to have. You know, we're actually going to take some calls, too. If you want to talk to the master himself before our news break, call us at 312-981-7200 and tell us, what do you want to master in a month? I mean, there's so many great things that you can do with your life. You might as well just
there's
get on the horse.
You can do standing backflips and all that stuff.
That was the most impressive of all of them.
It is, Max. Mm-hmm. That's pretty insane. Have you gotten to use that anywhere?
So I have. You know, the interesting thing about that challenge is that going into it, I thought it was completely a physical challenge, right? So mm-hmm. I would have to strengthen my legs and jump higher and strengthen my core so I could tuck in the air. But really, it turned out to be a challenge in fear.
I could imagine.
A complete mental challenge, right? So on day one, I had the physical abilities to do a backflip. And the month I really spent just trying to overcome the fear and convince myself that it's okay to go upside down and not land on my head.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, that's a complete fear. I also, this 5-minute improvisational blues guitar solo, do you know how to play guitar or did you have to learn from day one?
I do now. Even from day one, I did have some experience strumming chords and so on, but the idea was to take that to the next level.
That is pretty cool. I'm amazed when people know how to play guitar because I'm like, that's too much for me. But yeah. I could learn.
Yes, you
in
could.
In 30 days.
In just a month. You can do whatever you want to do. And I think that it's cool that you're hyper-focused on just a certain aspect of things. I think that that's a really important thing to do. And, you know, you mentioned a really important part of learning anything, which is confidence and the role that confidence plays in doing these things. Mm. Now, you talked about words of encouragement that come up on the app every once in a while to keep you motivated. What are some of the things that this app is telling you while you're trying to learn how to do a standing backflip?
Right. So in the first version of the app, I'm really focused, you know, once you get going, once your learning structure is set up on a daily basis, the app really focuses on two things. So it helps you diagnose how you're feeling. So as I've been coaching a lot of people, one of the things I found is that most people have less trouble with the actual learning, but are usually more, you know, struggling with the psychological aspects, right? As you point out, right? So maybe they're frustrated or tired or overwhelmed or don't have the confidence. And so with the app, you have a chance to express, you know, one of these emotions, and the app talks you through mostly sort of as an empathizer, right? So everyone that's learned anything has been overwhelmed or tired or frustrated or confused. And so the app really just tries to walk through that emotion with you. And the truth is, if you're feeling any of those things, it's probably a good sign. Because if you're not, you're probably not, you know, pushing yourself outside your comfort zone and actually trying to learn something new.
Has anyone come back from the app and been like, this was amazing and I learned this?
So the app actually just launched a week ago.
So, oh, okay. So there's still time.
There are a bunch of people in the middle of their month-long challenges. Before that, I've been coaching people over text message, and those people have done great things, everything from learning how to play jazz piano to learning to draw to building iPhone apps. So definitely, you know, my past students have really seen exciting results, and so I'm interested to see and excited to see how the students of the app do as well.
Very nice. So where can we find it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the best place to find the app is on the Month to Master website. So you can either search for Month to Master or go to monthtomaster.com. So monthtomaster.com.
And I have a bone to pick.
Sure.
Is it only Apple?
Yeah, right now it's only for the iPhone, but the Android app is a work in progress.
Okay,
so,
very good.
Stay tuned for that.
Us Apple people are much more ambitious, Esmeralda.
Yeah,
obviously.
I'm going to have to buy an iPhone now.
I think you do.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot, Max.
Max, before we let you go, thanks again for joining us here on WGN Radio tonight. You know, I kind of this year I wanted to do three things. I wanted to learn how to cook better. I wanted to learn how to exercise correctly, and I wanted to learn how to dance better. I had these going on since the beginning of the year. I saw this amazing guy in Nashville. So Esmeralda, get this: a guy rolls into this honky tonk. Mustache, he kind of looked like Wilford Brimley with a big 10-gallon cowboy hat on.
Okay.
And like, we were listening to music. He goes into this bar, grabs the best-looking girl in the bar, and dances with her for one song, drinks a beer, and then leaves. Like, everyone was stone-cold silent. How did this guy do this? Mm-hmm. And then just roll through.
The Month to Master app?
Lo and behold, 10 months later, he told me it's the month for the master app. Yeah. No, but that was the thing. Like, I wanted to see how to do that. So what would you tell me if I wanted to just learn how to dance and I wanted to learn how to just do one solid dance at the local honky-tonk or at the local bar and I wanted to impress people? What would be the first step that I would have to take after I incorporate myself into this month to master app?
Yeah, so I think the first thing, you know, the very first step is to figure out, to make that goal more specific, right? So to figure out what kind of dance is that, and, you know, for how long, like, you know, so do you want to do, you know, this X kind of dance for 2 minutes, let's say. And then once you're clear about that, the next step is to seek out an expert in that capacity. And whether that's a real person or a YouTube video or someone's blog, in the case of dance, in the case of physical skills, I would always recommend finding someone in person that can guide you through the process. One, it will give you a little bit more accountability. You'll be accountable to this person. But two, you know, there's no way to practice anything by reading about it. You know, you have to do the thing that you want to learn. And so in the case of dance, you're going to have to dance. And so finding a partner that's either willing to you know, dance with you for free, or, you know, if you could find a coach that is in your budget, I would say that would be the next step.
Finding the dance partner is the hardest part, Max.
Right. I'll be your dance partner.
So, thanks, Esmeralda.
And so the good news is the next versions of the app, I'm focused on actually helping curate the best learning resources and materials and instructors. So hopefully, you know, in the future, you come to the app, you can say, you know, I'm looking to learn to dance, and the app will be able to find that person for you. In the meantime, you know, what I found to be, you know, in the way that I found, for example, my backflip coach, when I did that challenge, was I just posted on Facebook and I said, hey, you know, next month I'm trying to learn how to backflip. Does anyone know someone that could teach me and has access to a gym where we can practice? And I received, you know, a couple replies, and found my coach in that way. And so I think I think we in our heads we make it seem harder than it actually is. So I would encourage you to, you know, reach out to your network on Facebook, and, you know, search a little bit on Google. I think oftentimes we give up before we even try.
All right, Max. Thank you so much. Month to Master app. Very cool. You can find it where again?
You can find it at monthtomaster.com, or you can search Month to Master on Google.
This was very awesome. Thank you so much, Max, for talking to us and sharing your app.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Choir. And here we have Eduardo Calvillo. He is the partner and curator of Ruido Fest. Say it with me, Michael. Ruido Fest.
Ruido Fest.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, first try.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so welcome, Eduardo. This is exciting. Tell us, what is Ruido Fest?
Hi, thank you for inviting me. Ruido Fest is a Latin American festival that happens, this would be the third year, in a neighborhood near downtown, which is Pilsen. And we have over 50 bands in 3 days, three stages. This year, actually, we have four stages. We just added an extra one for special performances. And pretty much it's just showcasing up-and-coming bands from Latin America and Spain. as well as bands that are already pretty much established in the underground Latin rock scene.
Okay, and what I'm just amazed because I've never heard of something like this. Are you guys pretty much the only things you would say?
Yeah, I guess there's...
In the U.S. at least?
In the U.S., yeah. This big, yes, we are the first ones, you know, doing it. But it's like, this is kind of a thing that happens in Latin America. They have like huge festivals such mm-hmm. as Vive Latino in Mexico City. And now they're starting to do the Lollapalooza versions of Brazil, Argentina, and Chile.
Oh, nice. Wait, yeah. Of Lollapalooza or yeah. a Lollapalooza like?
Lollapalooza, you know,
oh, in
branching
Brazil.
Out.
Oh,
in
nice.
Brazil.
Yeah, and it's actually a really, really well-known big festival. It's almost getting yeah. bigger than the American one, too, which
oh,
is what I've heard.
Very
yeah,
cool.
no, yeah, that's very true. And then they also showcase, you know, some of the up-and-coming Latin American rock bands in those Lollapaloozas, but that doesn't happen here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the idea came from, pretty much.
Very nice. So where are you from?
I am originally from Mexico. Mexico.
Okay. Where exactly?
San Luis Potosi.
Okay. So why? All right. Well, you came to Chicago.
Yes.
Was there
anything?
It was
like mid-90s. I came here and then...
what was the scene?
There was no
point?
Scene, actually. There wasn't. Because pretty much like me growing up in Mexico, mm-hmm. it was me and my peeps listening to English or British American rock.
Okay.
And there was only a few bands playing Latin, you know, rock in Espanol.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, you know, very excited about it until I came here when I found out that, you know, there was pretty cool music, you know, happening back there. And then I started, like, digging into it. And then a few years later, I found myself in a situation where I was invited to do a radio show just because I have a large collection of this artist.
Okay. And what's that show?
That's on Wednesday nights in WLEW, Loyola's University radio station. It's called Rock Sin Anestesia.
Okay.
And you showcase a lot of, like, some different types of music and different types of variety music on that station then, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, cool. Pretty much, yeah, because this, what they call Latin rock or Latin alternative pretty much involves, like, different genres such as ska, reggae, mm-hmm. hip-hop, electronic, dance, you know, pretty much all of what's non-mainstream, pretty much what you hear in, you know, the stations here in Chicago, Latin stations.
What a cool thing to do, like, you know, to be able to showcase this great music that you have. And I yeah. find it so interesting, the fact that you were listening to kind of American and British rock in Mexico,
right.
and then you come to America, and you're like, all right, now it's time to really break out the Latin American music.
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting. Like, I found out myself that there's, like, if you check out statistics, for example, streaming services such mm-hmm. as Spotify, and if you click, for example, in Metallica, and you go to the About section, and mm-hmm. the number one country that listens to Metallica is Mexico. You go to Interpol, same thing. Rammstein, you name it, it's
yeah.
always Mexico. So Mexico has a little, very large...
Morrissey.
Yeah. Morrissey.
Too. Morrissey,
really?
For some
yeah.
reason, is a huge fan base, and not even just Mexico, like Latin America. That's like, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing to just hear, like, people like, yeah, no, I loved Morrissey.
That's so interesting, because what an emo kind of
right?
music sense mm-hmm. for such like a vibrant culture. You know, I'm, as some of our listeners know, Kevin Richter and I, we have the Sound Session show, mm-hmm. which is basically music based. So we get to see a lot of music, and I'm sure you do too, with like throughout the year, Esmeralda. I've never been to like a big show in Latin America. I spent some time there,
right.
but what is like the energy of their shows as opposed to shows here in America?
Oh, it's way different.
Yeah.
Like myself, I never seen a Mexican festival until this year, in March. Last March, I went to Vive Latino, which is a humongous festival, and then I'm looking at the stages, I'm looking at the crowd, I'm looking at everybody singing every song of each artist. That's, you know, like at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this amazing. And I was just thinking about comparing to Lollapalooza. Lollapalooza is like a little festival compared to that.
Really?
It's just like, yeah, the size of the stages is just like, you know, absurd.
Oh my gosh! Is it a bigger stage show?
It's,
because
yeah.
there's a lot more people in the bands usually
yeah,
that
exactly.
I'm finding.
Yeah, no, it's totally like they do things and you know, massive. Yeah, they don't joke around with stages and production and you name it. It's pretty awesome. compared to, and then obviously the audience is like pretty intense.
Yeah.
Like I've heard bands such as like Metallica that they want to record a DVD concert for one of their, and they picked Mexico City because that's where the Rage Against the Machine, like a bunch of bands, The Cure.
Everyone's
like everybody knows
insane.
That
yeah.
where, you know, the excitement's at. It's in Latin America.
Wow, because, you know, Metallica just came to Chicago this past weekend.
Yeah, what did they play?
Soldier Field.
But that probably was nothing compared to the shows they do.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. No, the Mexico City Stadium is like four times as big as Soldier Field.
Oh, my gosh. Whoa. So... Yeah. With Rido Fest, I think it's great that, do you think, because most of our listening audience doesn't speak Spanish or even know half the bands playing.
Right.
Can they go? Would it be, is it easy, is it relatable?
You know, it's funny that you say that because we had this festival in mind just to cater, you know, the Latin American crowd, but found out last year, the second year, that there was a lot of people that were like non-Spanish speaking people mingling and, you know, and just going to check out new artists that they think is pretty cool. For example, one of the artists that we have this year is El Guincho, this cool guy from Spain. He was part of Pitchfork a few years back.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, that tells you that, you know, there's this audience of people, American audience, that are looking out for or starving for new different music, and they pick, you know, websites like Pitchfork, obviously the festival, and you know, they know pretty much it's for like, you know, people that really dig into like new cool stuff.
Right. And I do love that. Like, I was looking through the artists and it's not what you hear on the radio here.
No.
Specifically Spanish language stations. You don't hear these bands. So I think this is a great opportunity for people to not only find a different culture and different music in general.
Right. No, yeah, I agree. Like even people that do listen to this type of music, you know, like in their houses or their headphones and their streaming services, a lot of these bands are not well known, not even in that scene. And but I took the time this past 2 years to like travel to some countries and, you know, to find some of these artists to present here in Chicago, which is like raising a lot of awareness in Latin America. Like, a lot of people know already the festival. Mm-hmm. It's kind of surprising how the festival has a lot of impact down there. And here, you know, it's just starting, you know, to create a little, you know.
That is awesome. So July 7th through 9th, and it is in the Pilsen neighborhood, but it's Adams Medill Park.
Yeah, it's pretty much by Ashland and Roosevelt.
Okay. Kind of.
So there was the EDM festivals are often held at Adams Medill Park as well, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So they
know how to handle a festival.
Right. Well, actually, we started that.
All right.
Look at that.
That was, we
the
found,
OGs.
Exactly. We found that park, and then it was pretty awesome. And then we made the very first year, 2015. And then for the following year, that electronic music festival, they were like, oh, this park is really close to downtown, pretty cool. It's already like, we've proven that, you know, it works. So they moved that that festival to that park. So they did a reggae fest, I think, last year. So they're starting to provide more festivals to this neighborhood.
You know, I wanted to know, why Chicago? Why is this a good hub for this kind of music? And what made you kind of plant your feet here as opposed to somewhere like L.A. where there's a huge Hispanic population?
Yeah, I think what I find is that there's already people that tried to do that in LA especially, but it wasn't well planned. And then here, at Chicago, like being like, you know, like a destination, tourist destination for a lot of people to come here and check out, you know, Lala, Jazz Fest, Blues Fest, Pitchfork, Riot Fest. So it's a lot of people that already know the city, you know, which you can come and, you know, watch a 3 days festival showcase and then, you know, go to other places in, you know, a beautiful city like Chicago. And I find that, you know, one more festival, you know, why not? You know, we have so many here in Chicago.
No, there's never enough festivals.
Right? Yeah.
You never have enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we started, you know, 2015. And it worked pretty good, successful. And last year was like way more. You know, we have more people that showed up at the festival. It was like over 23,000 people in the 3 days. So, you know, it's growing.
I love it. Well, let's take a quick break here. I think this is a good place to stop, and we'll pick up after this quick commercial break here on WGN. We're talking Rudio Festival?
Rido
Festival.
Rido Fest.
It's going to be my practice into this. We're talking with Eduardo, and we'll be back in just a second here on WGN Radio.
And we're back at WGN Radio, 720, Esmeralda Leon. Michael Heidemann filling in for Dave Plyer, and here with Eduardo Calvillo, partner, curator of Rido Fest.
It's a Rido, Esmeralda.
All right. Come on. See, now he's got it on me. July 7th through the 9th, it's in Pilsen neighborhood, Medill Park, RidoFest.com. I am really interested in finding out what you think the climate is going to be, considering the state of affairs with Trump. And everything,
you mean that climate?
Yes, yeah. That climate, not how hot it will be.
Right.
But just the fact that they're all Latin American artists.
You know, it's funny you say that because a couple of bands that I had talked to about coming to play the festival, and they actually last minute pulled out because of the Trump situation.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so they were from other countries.
They're from Spain, from the Basque country, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
People are boycotting, kind of.
Wow. you know, South by Southwest had a similar problem as well when there was that big immigration, the travel ban.
Well, they weren't letting them in.
They weren't letting them even
play. These guys don't want to come.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, no, there has been an issue about it, especially with artists that want to come and showcase. It's pretty, my opinion, it's pretty absurd that international artists have to go through a lot of problems, issues, just to get a permit to come and perform in the U.S. Where in the other way around, like if you want to go to any country in the world, it's so easy. Like government actually help you to showcase talent outside of other countries. But yeah, that's how it is.
It makes no sense because what these musicians are bringing is just mirth to crowds. It's like, what are they going to do with their guitars? It's meant for creativity and to inspire people, and I feel like the only way we're going to get over these kind of differences is by bringing people together. Right. Why would you want to separate that in the first place? This is why this is such a good festival here in Chicago,
and I think all that mirth is going to bring a lot of money.
Mirth and money.
And
exactly. Yeah, exactly. This is how you get like you push the economy up.
Exactly.
By bringing money from the outside, it was only a few artists. Unfortunately, it's a couple.
Okay, well that's good. But a lot of the artists from outside of the U.S. Are there? How many would you say?
Yeah, no,
are
most
US
of
based?
Them. Like this year, we have not a lot of locals per se, and by locals I mean bands from the U.S. Most of them, I'd say over 90%, not from other countries: Spain, Colombia, Venezuela, Argentina, Chile, a lot of Chilean artists this year, Mexico, obviously, and
That's cool, though. Yeah. I do love the big mix of countries, especially, I've never heard anything from Venezuela. Like, you don't expect, what's down there?
They're going through such big problems right now. The country's, really bad economically, and, there are a lot of riots right now. And we have two bands from Venezuela this year. One of them is really awesome, Los Amigos Invisibles.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard of them. It's pretty like a party band, like the ultimate party band. Yeah, you got to check them out.
Cool.
What would you say is some of your favorites? So you just mentioned one.
Yeah, we kind of went over this off air, some of your favorites and some of the other favorites of other radio hosts.
Yes.
So.
Well, I'm pretty excited to see a classic band from the 90s, which is Phobia. It's a Mexican rock band that back then, in my opinion, they were way ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Like if you listen to their music now, sounds like contemporary, like current. And that, that music was done over 20 years ago. But that's one of my favorites. I'm pretty excited to see them. There's a couple of up-and-coming bands. One of them, it's this duo from Puerto Rico, which is Buscabulla. And they're a pretty awesome band. There's a lot of hype about them in the media. And there's another one, Sotomayor. Another duo from Mexico City, pretty cool. A garage band, party band from Spain as well.
We were actually talking about them before. Yeah. They look like an indie, like, duo kind of girl, guy-girl couple who is going to be playing.
Yeah, I think they're actually brothers or something. It's an awesome band, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
A brother and sister.
I'm sure they're fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, and they're one of the headliners on Saturday, is Molotov. And a lot of people haven't heard of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard of them because I was in Mexico at the time. Right. And they're huge in 1997. So they're playing a 20th anniversary of their album.
Yeah, their debut album, Donde Jugarán Las Niñas, which is a pretty massive album. And where, like, every song in that album was a single on the radio.
Yeah.
It was a massive album. And even to this day, you know, I think they play, like, most of the album every time they perform. But this time they're going to perform the whole album in its entirety. And plus, you know, there's time, the greatest hits. But yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about seeing Molotov as well. And the lyrics of that, you know, if you know Spanish, it talks about government problems, politics.
Yeah, it blew my mind when I first listened to the album because there's a lot of swearing.
mostly swearing. Yeah, it's kind of like a hip hop type of.
Yeah, there's a little hip hop. There's rock elements, but it's. And they do actually, and the big single that I remember was Gimme the Power.
Right.
And that has kind of a mix of English. So they kind of, because I think one of the artists was born here in the U.S.
The drummer's from Michigan, El Gringo Loco. He's from Michigan, and he was born here, and then he just went to Mexico City and find himself into, you know, invited to be the drummer for a rock band. And there, you know, that's where it started.
So I love this mix of English, Spanish, rock, hip hop. So that's going to be a really good one. And then Sunday, what are you looking forward to?
Sunday, we got this, looking forward for Víctimas del Doctor Cerebro. It's kind of like a mixture of like a circus show.
Mm-hmm.
They do like pyro and like circus acrobatics on stage, and they dress up. And it's always like a good time watching that band. You never know what they're going to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Check that
one out.
As a festival runner, as a curator, what is the kind of the insurance or conversations you have with these bands before they're about to do like spinning circles with pyro?
Speaking of that, we have this DJ, Silverio. Have you guys heard of him? Oh, yeah, you're in for a surprise.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this is a DJ that actually invites people to like throw things at him, especially beer. So this year he requested like a mesh. He's a very wild DJ that pretty much starts like a normal DJ, but at the end of their set he like pretty much, you know, strips naked on stage.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Two shows in one.
Man, how could you miss it now? I mean,
right?
Tickets are flying off the shelves at the moment.
Yeah, so
that.
July 7th through 9th, Rido Fest, and it's RUIDOFEST.com. Where you can find all the info on the bands, and you can find info. I don't know half of these bands, but it's going to be quite an experience, as Eduardo has told us. But I think that's nice to just kind of go with a free mind. Like, you don't know what's going on. You don't have an agenda. You just go. Go listen.
Yeah, my suggestion is always, like, you know, the less known band play early during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the doors are at noon. So, you know, if you get there by 1:30, 2 p.m., you'll get to see, you know, the newest bands that are really, sometimes, in my opinion, way better than the headliners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, they, you know, got to come early to check out those gems.
Now, what should people bring when they go to the festival? Should you pack your sunscreen and everything? Is there going to be a lot of great food there that we can all try out and everything?
No, yeah. Speaking of that, like, everybody tells me, the feedback is awesome about the food. Because we have food not... You would think that it's only Mexican food, but we have Colombian food, Peruvian food, you name it. You know, there's like a lot of representations. At some point, what's his name? Rick Bailey's wanted to be part of it.
Really?
Showcasing like 500 nations restaurant type thing. Yeah, there was, you know, there's a lot of interest in that, you know, food department. But yeah, no, it's awesome. The food is like great. So I totally recommend doing that. We have Lucha Libre as well. We have luchadores.
Yeah,
that's always fun for the little ones. Like, you know, there's like families that go to the festival and they want to see like a Mexican wrestler, a masked Mexican wrestler. We have that.
Is that part of the, because you had said that there's an extra stage?
No, that's actually, you know, that's separate.
Oh, that's part of it. So and what's on that extra stage?
Ferris wheel as well, you know, some of that stuff.
What's on the extra one this year, you said?
The extra one is one of our sponsors. I don't know if I can name the brand, but one of our sponsors just came out with the idea that they're going to do another stage where they're going to have some special performances from some well-known bands that have not been announced yet.
Oh, so yeah. Secret stuff.
So there's like nine more bands, you know, TBA to be announced.
Oh, that's awesome.
So check out the social media on our page.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. And you said, you know, you mentioned that you were going to be doing some additional shows throughout the year because this party just doesn't stop with this festival.
It does not stop on July. Yeah. No, we have a few shows programmed already for the rest of the year of this Mexican great Latin female singer, Natalia Lafourcade, coming to Chicago. You know, we're presenting that show on August 8th. And then September 1st, we have Kinky, another awesome band from Monterrey, Mexico. So, yeah, we're doing year round of rock and roll.
Right on, right on. And I think we have some tickets to give away too, don't we?
We do.
This is exciting. So you gave us some tickets to give away. So how about we give them to like the seventh caller? Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to call in 312
what is it, Mike?
312-981-7200. I've said that name that number about 5 billion times in my life. 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls. We'll give you some tickets. You can go check out this amazing festival. It's happening July 7th through the 9th. It's going to be a really great time. Are you excited, Esmeralda?
Yes. Are you kidding me? I'm beyond excited. RidoFest, RIDOFEST.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to WGN Radio tonight. This is Michael and Esmeralda. We're in for the great Dave Plyer.
Mm-hmm.
What a good man.
He is. He's letting us fill in.
I know. We get to drive in his own captain's chair. So I'm very excited that Dave let us, you know, sit in for him.
And just like Dave Plyer show, you're a little late.
Oh, oh well, he did tell us specifically.
Yes.
He went, hey, just make sure be late to the news.
Mm-hmm. No, that's it. Yeah, he did. I'm sure he mentioned that to you.
Consistency.
Just, look, yeah, don't let Roger get used to anything different. He's used to being late with the news. Don't wake him up early, you know.
No, well, you know.
We can't change
we
up
We need
things
to help, you know, we
here.
Don't, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We don't want to freak out.
Yeah, no. I don't want anyone moving my cheese.
You know? There you go. Hey, Roger, I have a question for you.
Okay.
You're not a big drinking man, right?
No. No, I rarely have anything to drink.
Have you ever been?
Well, in college.
You would imbibe?
Okay. Yeah, I imbibe a bit.
Okay. Did you have any hangover cures that you used?
Ooh.
Like, what was your go-to when, you know, you felt a little...
I didn't have a go-to. I just waited it out.
Okay, well, that's a way. That's something you could do.
Some waits were longer than others. But from what I can remember, again, knowing that I'm old, I didn't have that many hangovers, to be honest
with you.
Well,
that's good.
Man, made of steel.
I didn't drink to hangover status.
Oh, okay.
I do remember, because people told me, there were a couple of times that I did not make it back on my own.
Oh.
But those were few and far between.
Well, that is good to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Very responsible of you, yes. Roger.
Well, I don't know if responsible. I just couldn't hold my liquor. I mean, a little weak in the liquor department.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we all are sometimes.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, this isn't going to really apply to you because you don't really drink.
Well, but I could always pass this information
there
on
you
to
go.
Others I may know.
Pass it on to your other friends with hangovers.
Yeah.
Pass it on to Dave Plyer when he comes back.
Yeah, what have you heard about Dave and his alcohol?
He doesn't drink a drop. No, not at all. Not at all. But I did hear that there are some ways that other countries like go through and fix their hangovers.
Yeah, well, two... It is 3:40 in the morning.
Yes.
The bars are about to completely be done.
Oh,
at
yes.
4 a.m.
They close at 4, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And those people, I'm sure, will need a hangover cure.
Mm-hmm. And they're probably listening right now.
Exactly.
So we have some good tips for you.
They're listening in the cabs. coming home.
Or the Ubers. Or the Lyfts. Or they're stumbling across Michigan Avenue right now. Oh, I see a few. Hey, what's going on, my friend?
Yeah, checking the WGN radio app
there
on their
go.
Phone.
See? Mm-hmm. They're
and
all
listening
over the
to
place.
You guys, sure.
Because they heard that we have some hangover cures.
Hey, guys, what time is it? Oh, 3:40. Oh, I got to get
hangover
WGN cure
time.
With the hangover. Thank you.
Well, we're going to help them no matter what because we have some great, great sources to fix those nasty hangovers.
Yes.
Oh,
oh
yeah.
There you go. It
there
is closing
go.
Time.
It's about that
for a
time.
Lot of places, they start at 3:30 and they're like, you need to get out.
Mm-hmm. And if you're in Germany, let me tell you, they got their own closing time and hangover cure here. They actually have
like
a word for the big breakfast they eat after a heavy night of drinking.
Ooh.
Seems to be.
Oh, good luck with that word.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to give it my best try. Oof. You ready, Esmeralda?
We're in the safe harbor zone, right?
Kater Frühstück.
Ooh,
that's
okay.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
There's a lot of umlauts, is what I'm saying. It often involves roll mops or pickled herring with cucumber and onion.
Oh, no, thank you.
Mm, I love that on my sandwich. Mm-hmm. So good. The Germans also subscribers of the hair of the dog technique, which, as you know, you just wash down the old hangover with the drink that you had the night before, whether it be a beer, another shot of whiskey. Nothing better than that at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's the last thing I want when I have a hangover.
You know, I'm a little bit German, too. I'm German and Irish, which are two very strong.
Stock up on your herring?
Yes, I have pickled herring all over my apartment right now. It smells. It's pungent.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
I'm sure just the smell of it will cure your hangover.
Mm-hmm.
In Russia, they drink a lot of vodka. So an old Russian.
Wait. They drink a lot of vodka in Russia?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. News to me.
Did you not know that?
Wait a minute. They call it vodka.
Yes. Actually, it says that. Are you reading my notes?
No, not at all. I'm
know these things?
I am part German and part Russian.
Oh, well, there you
go. My aunt, one of my aunts, my aunt on my mother's side, my mother's sister, and one of her brothers were born in Russia before the family came to America.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this says that they claim you can't get a hangover if you drink the right way, which is sticking just to vodka and drinking it neat. But if you do stray from the, as you said, vodka. Drink a mildly alcoholic drink called kvass. It's made with rye bread soaked in sugar and yeast. And they also do saunas, and then they drink a mixture of brine and tomato juice. Yeah.
Get kind of burn it out of your system.
Right. Yeah. You sweat it out, and then you get the salt from the brine, and then because you're dehydrated, and then the tomato juice, I don't know, vegetables?
Mm.
Yeah. You need vegetables?
A good V8.
This sounds almost worse than like the night of drinking before, like needing to go through all of this.
Yeah, but
you're
so drunk, you probably don't feel anything.
Well, no, you're hungover, so
you're feeling it 10 times.
Right, you're sweating 10 times worse
than you did.
It should
before.
Be good. No, it's good. You sweat it out.
Yeah.
You sweat it out.
I like that. I learned the word vodka.
Vodka.
There you go. Vodka.
Well, how about this? In Ireland, my great ancestors, where they came from, you know, they're known for drinking. But I guess when it comes to hangovers, they get them twice as hard. And, you know, always with a quick joke, the Irishman made referred to his hangover as an inexplicable headache, which makes sense. They cure it naturally with another Irish breakfast. Think bacon, sausage, black and white pudding, barf. I could not do that after I was drinking.
Have you had black and white pudding?
I have not.
Oh, okay.
Is it any good?
I don't know. My wife has never talked about that. She's also Irish.
Oof.
And she's never talked about that. She's talked about soda bread and some of the more traditional Americanized Irish meals.
Oh, white pudding is a meat dish.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Usually their puddings aren't actual puddings. It's like other things.
Kind of like a pie of some kind, maybe?
Yeah, it looks like I'm looking at a picture of it on Wikipedia. It looks like a big hunk of sausage.
Mm.
Yeah. It's white pudding, or it's technically oatmeal pudding, according to this. Black pudding has blood in it.
Oh.
White pudding does not.
Sounds appealing.
I know, right? But I think that's what happens. You got to eat this, and then it kind of works magic things.
You have to eat blood before you.
No, it's in. So it's in like a sausage.
Vampire.
Yeah, No, but it's
a blood sausage, and you mix it in with the oatmeal, and the blood comes out into it. Yeah,
and then it's essentially a sausage.
Okay,
so it's pork meat, fat, suet, bread, and oatmeal. Everything you need for a perfect hangover.
Yeah, that'll settle real good.
Yeah.
This cannot be like what people do. But, you know, there's also other ingredients. Fried tomato, fried eggs, mm-hmm. baked beans, and the soda bread that we had talked about before.
Yeah. So there's the English version too, English breakfast.
Hmm.
And it's the same thing, except I don't think they don't give you the soda bread,
mm-hmm.
but it's, I think, black. They do the black pudding. But they do the tomatoes, and then they give you bacon, but they have different kind of bacon. It's this really nice, thick bacon, which is so delicious.
Yeah.
It's not that regular old, like, stick bacon that we have. And I've had it, and it's so good. Oh, and they do beans.
Mm-hmm.
They do the Heinz beans. They're kind of sweet.
Oh, see, that's not too bad. That sounds kind of tasty.
It is delicious.
You know, we had a quick text message from 847. I think this is from Aaron, but it's E-R-N. Could you spell that German word?
Yes. I texted it to her, but for our listening audience, K-A-T-E-R-F-R-U umlaut, H-S-T-U umlaut, C-K.
I love that you needed to add the umlauts, just in case.
Well, I couldn't do it on the text, so, because I don't know how that button works on the keyboard.
Well, let's move right along with our, what do we got next? What are they doing down in France?
Let's see. Apparently, they don't get hangovers.
Oh, lucky.
Those French.
Lucky ducks.
No, they just keep drinking.
That's, right?
They don't stop drinking wine.
They just constantly
wine.
Drink. They recommend, though, a cassoulet. It's a casserole made with meat and white beans. And I've had that, too. And it's a meat bonanza.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sausages, pork, the beans. And it's kind of like in a soupy casserole. I think there's bacon in there, too. It's just a lot of meat.
So this is just our version of the McDonald's meal when you wake up after a bad hangover. You just fill yourself with just processed food and just a lot of meat.
France, they're probably making that from scratch.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Such show-offs.
It's such those French.
While they're drinking.
Yes.
They make it while they're drinking.
With a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, I think we need to say au revoir for just a quick moment. But we're going to be back with some more
French.
Of the hangover
Hangovers.
Cures from across the country. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is Michael and Esmeralda here on WGN Radio.
You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm Esmeralda Leon, and Michael Heidemann is to my side.
Yes, Esmeralda, it's great to see you again. This is Michael, aka known as the junior varsity John Hansen. thanks to the 847.
The B-Squad John Hansen.
Mm-hmm. As you know, Esmeralda often speaks with our good buddy John Hansen, and I'm in for him tonight. This is Michael Heidemann. I'm the producer of the Patty Vasquez Show.
You're in for him.
Yeah.
You're not filling in for John Hansen.
That's a good point.
This is our show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He just isn't here today.
Yes. So, stay
tuned.
He'll
be here on Tuesday.
Yeah, he'll be here on Tuesday. You'll be able to hear him again.
But we're filling in for Dave Plyer.
Mm-hmm. We're in here for Dave Plyer, the great Dave Plyer. We were talking about hangover cures from around the world, so we're going to keep that going on. I got to know because I want to do a lot of drinking this holiday weekend.
Oh, God, that's right.
Because it's 4th of July.
Yeah, people are going to imbibe,
mm-hmm.
and you got to know how to, you know, get rid of it.
Yeah, you got to know how to fix these hangovers. So just to make sure. We left off with France, what happens in Italy?
Oh, in Italy, let me tell you, Michael, JB, John Hansen. they call it postumi della sbrnia, or the afterdeath of drunkenness. I totally butchered that Italian.
Ooh, that's a lot. You got to say it with an accent, I think.
Postumi della sobrina.
There we go.
There, I got it.
Oh, does that mean the after death of drunkenness?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great.
You know you're Italian.
Yeah.
So their cure for this after death is a speedy rebirth, as they call it, known as a double espresso.
Geniuses.
Yeah.
This is the best one I've heard so far.
Double espresso every mid-morning.
Look at you. You have a little speedy rebirth every morning.
I don't even have to get drunk to have it.
Yeah, it says drink one and quit your whining. That's what the Italians say about hangovers.
Really?
Yeah, have an espresso and suck it up, man.
Yeah.
going about your day.
But truly, there is nothing better than getting a nice hot cup of coffee after a night of drinking.
No,
I feel
thank
like.
You.
Yeah, even to start the day alone, this magic elixir is just so delicious.
I can't deal with it.
You don't like coffee?
I can't. No, not when I'm hungover. I'm sorry. No, I just need to crawl up into a little ball and go to sleep. And hope when I wake up, I feel better.
Just rocking back and forth in the fetal position for a little bit.
No, it depends because the room might be spinning, so we don't want to rock back.
There
and
is
forth.
One problem though. If you look from a scientific approach,
mm-hmm.
alcohol dehydrates your body.
Yes,
coffee also can dehydrate your body.
There you go.
So you need to, even though they're both liquids. You really need to drink water to rehydrate your body.
Exactly.
So,
or Gatorade.
Or Gatorade. Yeah, or one of those
coconut water. Sure.
Coconut water.
So, yeah, it's very hydrating, Roger.
Really?
Yeah, coconut water. Yes, it's good for you.
Coconut water is like 3 Gatorades, I heard at one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Like if you drink straight from a coconut, it's like drinking 3 Gatorades at one time. And also, like Roger had mentioned with the water, there was a time when I was in Austin, Texas for a short time, and I went to go see the Jimmy Kimmel show there. It was for a big music festival called South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Murray was on his show, and he gave the Bill Murray hangover cure.
Oh, I want to. What is it? I want to hear it.
Cue drum roll, please. The Bill Murray hangover cure is all. It's really simple.
Mm-hmm.
You have your drink, but then you drink a glass of water. So you drink another drink, and then you got to drink that another glass of water. So
that's
it's
not
each
a hangover
drink,
cure. That's just being responsible.
It's being responsible, but it does protect you from a hangover.
That is, I would think Bill Murray would have some crazy
like a secret thing.
Yeah, like I eat an egg, and then I'm fine. I don't know. The 857, I don't know where that is, but the 857 is listening, and they say bitters mixed with OJ.
Oh, wow.
I've never heard of that, but I've heard of when you have, like, if your tummy isn't feeling too hot, if you have soda water, and then you mix some bitters in it, it makes you feel better. Because bitters is like herbs.
So is that like an acidic kind of taste that you're getting?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's a little bit bitter because it's herbs, but it kind of feels nice because the bubbly thing. So if your tummy's a little
the bitters
off.
Are bitter?
Yes, the bitters are bitter.
How bitter are the bitters?
The bitters are so bitter. I don't know.
We should probably move this along.
Yeah.
In Mexico, our neighbors to the south apparently refer to a hangover feeling as, am I saying this right? Cruda?
Mm-hmm.
Or raw?
Yeah.
There's no worse word to describe a hangover than just raw. Rather than taking it easy or on their queasy stomachs, Mexicans actually present their guts with a challenge. And Esmeralda, you might have to help me with this.
Okay, go ahead.
¿Vuelve a la vida?
Nope.
Close, but no cigar.
Yeah. Vuelve.
Vuelve.
A la vida.
A la vida.
There you go.
Or a return to life, much like the Italians.
Yeah.
Not the Italians.
Yeah, it was the Italians. Oh, their rebirth.
They're great people. Mm-hmm. It's actually a
such
cocktail.
Such a good people, those Italians.
I never doubted them for a second.
Never met an Italian I didn't like. So what do you do in Mexico?
It's actually it's a return to life. Mm-hmm. Is actually a cocktail of shrimp, shellfish, lime, onions, and cilantro.
That is a ceviche,
also known as number 9 at Taco Bell.
There you go. Oh, you're going to fancy Taco Bells.
What Taco Bell is shrimp?
Right?
The one in Wicker Park, actually.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'm just making that up.
Yeah, no, that's the fancy one. You know what you do too?
Yes.
And I'm amazed it's not on there. Is you do this soup, and it's called Menudo. It's not just a band.
Yeah,
it's not
really.
Just a boy band. It's also a soup.
Yeah, but after 13 years of age, you can't have the soup. Just like the music man. I'm sorry, the soup's been around 13 years. You can't have it anymore.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You will be here all night. Tip your waitresses.
No, so it's a soup with tripe in it. Have you ever had tripe?
That's a type of fish, correct?
Nope.
Oh.
It's stomach.
Camille got
it. Stomach?
It's a stomach.
Yeah.
So it's the lining from the stomach, and it's usually cow.
Oy. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help me with my hangover.
Yeah, it's kind of stinky.
Or it'll make you say moo a lot.
Yeah. It's a stinky soup. It's a huge thing because it kind of takes a while to do because you got to cook the tripe like in a slow cooker so it gets really soft.
Yeah.
And then you put it in the soup and then you have to cook that for a while, let it simmer and all that. So it's usually a big Sunday thing.
Okay.
So it's usually like special occasion Sunday or when you're hungover because you were out Saturday night. And so Sunday morning you have your menudo. Ugh, I cannot stand it.
This does not sound very appetizing.
Have you had it before?
Almost every Sunday, my mom was in the kitchen making menudo, and it just stunk up the place.
Ugh. Yeah.
Because of the tripe. Because you have to put it in the slow cooker. She would cook that in the slow cooker overnight. So the house would be permeated with tripe smell. It was not a pleasant smell, at least not for me. People love that soup, and they say that it's essentially like the life giver, and it like brings you back.
I could see it.
But I'm like, I'm good.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll just stay in my fetal position and sleeping.
Well, you know, we only have a few minutes left on this segment, mm-hmm. so I wanted to just go around quickly and just get everyone's own hangover cure, if that'd be okay. I want to start with Camille, our wonderful producer. What do you do to rid yourself of that horrible hangover cure?
Chicken chilaquiles with the fried egg. It's so good.
Wow.
It'll soak everything right up.
Where did you learn this from?
Actually, a restaurant in LaGrange has them.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. went over there one Sunday morning, ordered those, and it's been my go-to.
That is smart.
Yeah.
Have you ever had chilaquiles?
No, I haven't.
They're so super good. Delicious.
Man, sounds
next time
really
you're
good.
In a Mexican restaurant, just say that and they'll hook you up.
It isn't stomach lining, is it?
No. Okay. No, it's just tortilla chips and salsa with an egg, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think it's tortilla chips. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Esmeralda, what is your go-to?
Well, what I used to do, I haven't done it lately, but chicken noodle soup, mm-hmm. but specifically Campbell's.
Oh.
And you don't put a lot of water in it, so it's really salty. Mm-hmm. And then it'll even throw even more salt. So it'll bring out the water from you. Not bring it out, but, you know, kind of hydrates you up.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Because you're reacting with all that salt. Oh, that is a mm-hmm. salty soup, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would do that, and it's broth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of noodle in it, so it's kind of okay.
That's awesome. See,
yeah, that would do it for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. Mine, in fact, goes right along with that.
Mm-hmm.
I do the old classic. I drink a lot of water, or at least I try mm-hmm. to. Sometimes it's hard to keep it down. Crank up that AC to at 65, like freezing in your apartment.
Do you freeze it out?
I freeze it out, and then mm-hmm. I cook tomato soup and grilled cheese, the old comfort food. Just ease it into it, you know? And then I just slowly eat that throughout the day and then just like beg for it to please, please go away.
Do you beg St. Anthony to lose the hangover?
He would help me find it, though.
He'd help you find.
He's the finder.
Good health.
Yeah. And
again.
He drank way too much, too. He knew at a party.
All right.
Well, with that, that was a fantastic seg. If you need to know anything else, you can find this segment on WGNRadio.com. We're going to be posting it afterwards. All the hangover cures you need.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break and be back with some news with our friend Roger Badish in just a moment here.
You're listening to 720 WGN. I'm Esmeralda Leon. And
hey, this is Michael Heidemann.
The JB, or JV.
JV.
I'm calling you the JB.
JB.
The JV. John Hanson.
Yes.
As someone pointed out.
The less handsome and...
Oh, no. You are your own man.
Thank you, Esmeralda.
Man.
I didn't fail at being John Hanson, did I?
No.
Oh, thank you.
You're a good substitute.
Good. Thanks, Esmeralda.
On the line right now, though, we have a man who is the curator of the Museum of Failure, Dr. Samuel West. Good morning, right? Or is it afternoon for you?
It's still morning here.
Oh, good.
It's turning into afternoon soon.
Very good. So you are the curator of the Museum of Failures, and it's in Helsingborg, Sweden, correct?
Sweet. That's correct.
So yes.
So far you haven't failed.
Oh, yeah? Good. Yes. So tell us, what is the Museum of Failure?
It's a collection of failed innovations, whether it's products or services. That in some way failed to meet the expectations. Usually they were commercial flops. Everything from sort of tech gadgets and smartphones to food. I have some mm-hmm. Olestra, for example.
Oh,
that
no.
was a fat-free substitute. Yeah, it was fat-free, calorie-free, fat. And if you ate the potato chips, you didn't get fat, but you sat on the toilet.
Yeah. No, I remember that. Everything had a
diarrhea.
Yes.
Olestra, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a very big problem, and I'm glad we started off this segment hot.
I just thought it's always good to start off an interview with diarrhea, and then it can't get worse, you know?
Well, the crazy thing is, you say that this is a passion project. You know, there's a lot that's going into it just from your own sense of being. Like, what was the draw to this? What made you want to create this amazing museum?
It started, I mean, I'm an innovation researcher at Lund University, mm-hmm. and I consume so much sort of business literature, academic literature, and I just got sick and tired of all these success stories. It's like we're force-fed success stories every day, all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. it's in my sort of business innovation literature. It's in my wife's women's magazine. Oh, look at me. I lose weight. I'm so happy. Look at me. Learn from my success. And mm-hmm. I just started thinking, you know, where, at least in my, you know, branch with innovation, we know that 80 to 90% of all innovation projects, they fail. Where mm-hmm. are these failures? Why aren't they getting some attention? I dove into that, thought mm-hmm. it's time to give failures some attention because it's through failures that we actually learn, not through success.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I want to know, what is one of your favorite failed products that you have in the museum?
I like the products that maybe don't look so spectacular, but they offer a great story.
Okay.
So at the museum, there's these really cool gadgets. There's sensational electric face masks. There's some, you know, they're sort of spectacular, but the story, I think the story of Blockbuster is good, or even of Kodak.
Yeah.
So we have a Blockbuster DVD case. It was a huge company, you know, 8,000-9,000 stores. And they, you know, because of internal conflicts and mm-hmm. sort of strategy debates there internally, they actually invested in that streaming, and they were a huge company.
Yeah.
But then they're like, no, we're too greedy. We want to hold on to our late fees.
Mm-hmm.
So a big part of their profits came from late fees. Yeah. So Netflix is like, no, we changed the model. You just pay a monthly fee and you can keep the films as long as you want to. Blockbuster is like, no, we make our money punishing our customers. And despite being so big and, like, you know, massive company, mm-hmm. Netflix killed Blockbuster. They don't exist anymore.
That is one of the greatest stories, too, because Blockbuster had it all right in front of them. Like, you know, how amazing
they had
this
it
happening.
Right. They were, like, sitting right there. Yeah.
It's kind of sad because we have a lot of buildings that used to be Blockbusters.
Yeah.
And you can really tell which ones are Blockbusters.
They're all mattress stores now.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I think it's so cool.
No, but I mean, it's interesting to look at these failures. I mean, some of the failures are funny. Some of them are tragic. Mm-hmm. Some of them are just weird. But, I mean, the main point of the museum is to communicate that we need to accept failure if we want progress. And it doesn't matter if it's progress, sort of innovation for products or technology, mm-hmm. or if it's progress in other areas of life. We need to accept that, you know, we're going to fail on the way.
Oh, I like that. There's a nice positive spin to all these awful mm-hmm. things that just crash and burn.
And speaking of positive spins, you're talking about these great companies that kind of take a swing and just miss it and strike out a little bit. How about, can we talk about the fact that Colgate had a line of dinners, the TV dinners that they put out that were supposed to help you while you were brushing your teeth?
Oh.
What? No. Oh, now you mixed them up together. Oh. The Colgate, according to the literature,
mm-hmm.
brand failure literature, Colgate had a line of frozen dinners out in the early 80s. Ooh. It was a short-lived product.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it wasn't, it tasted like toothpaste or was good at fluoride in it. It was just, hey, we got a good brand. Let's start making something else. So that's the only product in the museum. I don't have the original sort of packaging. So mm-hmm. we had to reconstruct this sort of frozen dinner. So that's from the sort of brand literature, the sources of what was it like and what year was it released. But Colgate's not, they weren't too happy about it. They actually called me and said, we have no, from New York lawyers, we have no recollection of having a Colgate lasagna. I'm like, no, it's because we made up this box, you know. You're willing to, if they would, I asked them to send me the original and mm-hmm. I'm willing to, of course, I want to get rid of this reconstruction. I want the original one here.
Yeah, so do you?
But they haven't contacted. They haven't. Emailed me.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with. They're probably not gonna want to give you an original box.
You don't want to mess with the teeth
people.
Yeah, I feel like they probably burned them all in the back.
If it's a bad idea, I don't think that they're going to go for it. You know, much in the way of like of Weird Al like creating parody songs and somebody like reaching out to him and being like, please don't do that. Do you have companies that are frequently calling you and saying, hey, could you take this out of the Museum of Failure? Because this is kind of a stamp of, I guess, approval in a sense.
I can answer a little bit of a different question. When I started the museum, I reached out to the companies that are that I have on display and asked them to collaborate, sort of to give me their view and to add more nuanced sort of information about the product and the process. And I think I was up to 12 different companies, cool, innovative companies, and nobody wanted to be associated with the Museum of Failure. And I mean, it's respectful. It's not a, hey, let's go have a laugh at Kodak or Apple or, you know, Microsoft. It's really respectful.
Yeah.
There's some humor, but the tone is respectful, but they still don't want to collaborate.
So how do you, where do you find most of the products? Like you said, you couldn't find the original Colgate. Is it people donating? Where are you getting them from?
The dumpster outside.
the dumpster. So originally I bought a lot of stuff like through Craigslist and whatnot, like local sort of classified sites. But then once the museum got international media attention, it just exploded. So now I get donations from all over the world.
Oh, nice.
That's so cool. Do you have
right now there's more donation. Now I get more donations. I mean, it's really cool. All kinds of weird stuff.
Oh. That's incredible. That's incredible. We're talking to Dr. Samuel West. Awesome, awesome name, too, by the way, for a curator of a museum. We're going to take
I just bought round black glasses as well, so I look like a curator.
Oh, man. It's perfect. So can you hold on the line for us? We got to take a quick break right now. And you're listening to 720 WGN.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is Michael Heidemann. I'm with Esmeralda Leon.
Hello.
And on the phone, we have the great Dr. Samuel West. Not only an amazing name, but an amazing museum that he has all the way out in Sweden. Doctor, so we have a lot of great things in the museum right now. I mean, whether it be Coke Black, which it was so terrible that they took it off the shelves.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
No, but my boyfriend was telling me about it and how horrific tasting it was.
So it was just jacked up with caffeine then?
It was coffee, right, doctor?
No, it was a mix. Imagine a mix of coffee, cold coffee, Coca-Cola, and artificial sweeteners.
Oh, no, thank you.
That does not
sound
a hangover cure that I would
good.
Ever want
no.
to touch.
Or ever.
I actually opened, I had two bottles and I opened one of them. And most people there taste it and think it's horrible. But I think it's actually, it's nothing I would drink a whole bottle of. But I mean, it was a curious, sort of interesting, sort of spicy, it wasn't that bad. But it was a taste that was not for everyone, for sure.
Yeah.
We'll take you at your word
no,
for
thank
it.
You.
But I was going to say, you know, whether it be the Coke Black or the Harley Davidson cologne, I wanted to know, is there like a white whale out there that you have not gotten your hands on yet that you're looking to get into the museum?
I found some pictures online of Heinz, like purple Heinz.
Oh,
like purple ketchup.
Yes.
I remember this.
And I've looked everywhere. I looked on eBay. I've looked everywhere for this purple ketchup, and I can't find it. So yeah, if anybody has that, send it over to Sweden.
Oh yeah, you're on and I actually you have an email right for suggestions.
Yeah, it's the website is museumoffailure.se for Sweden, and yeah, the email address is on there.
Perfect.
Yeah, please, if you have suggestions, let me know.
Yeah,
what I'm actually looking
ketchup.
For is purple ketchup. I'm looking for suggestions that are not sort of easy to find. I mean, I've combed I've Googled myself stupid for like a year and a half here looking for stuff. But I'm looking for sort of branch specific, like a painter who paints houses and remembers that in the early, you know, 90s, they had paint that was supposed to be, you know, some kind of miraculous paint, and it flopped on the market. Something like that, like something that I could never find on Google.
Okay. So like specific
or if
and
people
niche.
Work in, yeah, PCs, exactly. I just spoke Swedish there.
How do you say failure in Swedish?
Misslyckanden.
Oh, that's a lot.
That's too much.
It's a, I enjoy that word, though. I enjoy this museum. It's such an interesting concept. I wish we had more of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually curious. So it's in Sweden. Mm-hmm. Is there, and I was looking at the website, it's traveling. Is that right?
Yeah. So we have the permanent museum is here in southern Sweden. Mm-hmm. And then we have two touring exhibitions. One is the proper sort of touring exhibition that goes on tour here later mm-hmm. this year. And it's basically a copy of the permanent museum. Those it's larger cities, LA, New York, Shanghai, are in the pipeline.
Any Chicago?
And then we'll work on that for sure.
Yes. Yeah. I want to see this museum.
And then And so that's in the works. And then we have a mini pop-up museum. There's 9 items from the museum that sort of, we can set it up over the day at like a innovation event or conference or some kind of in-house, kickoff or something for companies or for different events.
Right.
One is really easy. It's like 3 suitcases and we're off. But it's mini. What is it? What would you say? It's like, what do you call it at Starbucks? It's small, medium, large. So we have small is a pop-up.
Tall.
Medium is a touring and large. Tall.
Is
tall, tall, grande, and a venti. Mm-hmm. Venti's like the big old one.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, that's how we roll.
There you go. And we have a caller on the line, Pat, who has maybe something that you don't have in the Museum of Failure. Pat?
Let me hear.
Pat, what do you have?
Oh, hi, Ezra. It's Paxton.
Paxton. Yeah, have an idea for the doctor?
Yeah, Dr. Sam, my father failed miserably at this. He developed a glass hammer factory and then the silent smoke alarm. So I can send those to you in Sweden.
I can imagine.
Send them over. Send them over.
Thanks so much, Paxton.
Yeah, send them over. What's the website again? Museumoffailure.se,
Museumoffailure.se.
Yes.
I tried to buy the museumoffailure.com. So I got all excited because mm-hmm. I was so surprised that it was available. So I was like, yes, I got it, museumoffailure.com. And then I got the invoice and it said, congratulations, you have bought museumoffailure.com.
Oh, no.
I misspelled museum.
Oh.
So that's why it's in .se. So, yeah.
Oh, you had your little bit of failure for the museum.
Yeah, it was
failure.
Sad and tragic.
It seems apropos.
Mm-hmm.
And now in retrospect, it seems like it was meant to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It all comes together in the end.
It does. I'm wondering, is there anything current that you have that's going to be in the Museum of Failure? Something of maybe this year?
I do have Tidal.
That's a great one.
Streaming service Tidal.
Jay-Z's music streaming service.
It's still going. Yeah, I'm convinced that, or I'm not even convinced, it is a commercial failure. Nobody wants to pay extra money for a sound quality difference you can't hear, just so that already rich artists can get more money, which is a stupid idea.
Yeah.
But it's in the museum. And then some suggestions I've received of what will be in the museum in 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of suggestions that Apple Watch will be in the museum in the future.
I don't know why they came out with that. You know, that is a failure.
I don't get it.
It's
kind of
stupid.
Little.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see.
But, I mean, it's too early to say anything now, but
right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
it seems like it's a good candidate for the museum. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you can do a little forecast that it will be a failure. I was going to, and I forgot it, but I was going to bring in, because I think this is perfect for your museum, Pepsi Fire. I don't know if it's in Sweden yet. So Pepsi Fire is Pepsi with cinnamon. And from what I've heard, from what I've heard, it tastes like, I don't know if you guys have Red Hots in Sweden.
Yeah.
Those little cinnamon candies. Apparently it tastes like Pepsi with that.
And you drink that. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it's a drink. Huh. So I'm thinking it's going to be in your museum sometime soon.
That's cool. cool about Pepsi, though. They flopped with Pepsi Crystal.
Yeah.
I think it was in the 90s.
Yes.
But they've actually relaunched it a few times as nostalgia sort of were cool. And it's gone very well. So they've taken a failure. There was a flop. Mm-hmm. And then they just relaunched it. And it's actually, the one I have on display at the museum, it's from last year, I think, or 2 years ago. So, I mean, it's cool that they have sort of a nice take on it. They're willing to, they're not trying to hide it.
Yeah, and it's actually happened again with Zima.
Mm-hmm.
Zima's back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's back here in the States. But it's only for a limited time. Do you have that in the Museum of Failure?
Exactly. No, I don't have Zima. Send me some.
We'll have to get you a six-pack. I don't know if we can send
that. Yeah, give me a six-pack. You can drink it and send me the cans.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
we'll send the bottle.
Do you have a bottle of New Coke there, too?
Yeah, of course.
That's
New Coke is there.
That's one of the classics.
Yeah, one of the classic failures.
Yeah, the new Coke story is interesting about that, I think. There's a great article on Wikipedia about the Cola Wars, but New Coke. But I think it's interesting there that there's also some information on conspiracy theories where people are like, Coke could not possibly be that stupid to change their recipe to taste more like Pepsi. And then it actually led to the increased sales for Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of conspiracy theories. They're just kind of interesting to dive into.
Yeah, no, for sure. This museum is amazing.
I love this. I love this idea.
Thank you.
I think it's a very cool concept, and it shows you like that these companies, some people, you just got to swing and miss every once in a while to succeed. Just don't be Blockbuster. That's the one thing. Just don't be Blockbuster.
Don't be Blockbuster. Learn from Blockbuster's mistakes.
If you're coming to Sweden, come visit the museum.
Yes, and
or
the
Denmark. We're actually closer to Denmark than Stockholm. So
okay,
yeah, Copenhagen is only an hour from there. Yeah.
Perfect.
That was my pitch.
So museumoffailure.se.
.se. Yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Sam West. Museum of Failure in Helsingborg, Sweden.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Great. Let's take a quick break real fast, and we're going to be back with your news with Roger Badish in just a moment here on WGN Radio.
The president doesn't.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in 6 seasons, it's one gone cheese. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Wow, what an intro.
It's Bill Curtis.
Yeah, that's our own good friend,
Holy
Bill
moly.
Curtis.
Yeah, our good friend.
This is Michael and Esmeralda. We're in for Dave Plyer tonight, but we do have the great fortune of saying good morning to Dave Schwann. What's going on, Dave?
I've been looking forward to this moment. Good morning to you both. Michael,
morning.
Esmeralda, happy 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
To you as well. Happy
How's it
4th.
Going?
Very good.
Good.
Going
Very
great.
Very good.
Yeah, we're just revving it up. We just got done talking to the Museum of Failure, Dr. Sam West.
I had heard about that museum a while back somewhere, so it was kind of neat to hear the person who's behind it.
Yeah, and you got the deets.
Got the deets, yes.
The 411.
Got the deets. Okay.
You know, Dave, what's your plans for the holiday weekend here?
Oh, boy. Well, when you say holiday weekend here, you summed it up, Michael. It's here.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm as usual, here today. Mm-hmm. I will be here tomorrow morning and Tuesday morning with Dave. And I will visit my father tomorrow afternoon, and that's really about it here. I've got just a lot of work stuff going on. But,
This time of year, you still have a great time coming in. The holidays, the newscast, sure. With all that's going on in the world these days, a newscast during a holiday can reflect the holiday. And July 4th, that's always a great time to put together historic facts and news. And I've got some stuff planned for later this morning as well.
Very nice.
Some interesting stuff coming up.
That sounds like a great, great weekend. There's no better way to plan it out. And just you were speaking about the holiday weekend, the fact that it is the 4th of July coming up. So let's get right into it with our This Is History segment. In 1776, Esmeralda, did you know the Liberty Bell was rung to celebrate the first anniversary of independence on July 4th, 1777? Apparently, folklore led us to believe that it was rung on Independence Day, and historians actually state that it did not in 1776. And, you know, I just wanted to put to sleep all those rumors that were out there that it started
on rumors that were swirling.
Mm-hmm.
We had so many phone calls.
I know.
The Liberty Bell.
The text line.
By the way, you know, we had a long way to go before true liberty. We declared independence in 1776, but it was, 8 years before the British finally surrendered? So, you know, had a long road to hoe.
Right. And in 1796, the first Independence Day celebration was held. And in a remarkable coincidence, both John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, the only signers of the Declaration of Independence, later to serve as presidents of the United States, died on the same day, July 4th, 1826, which was the 50th anniversary of the Declaration.
True patriots.
Who died first?
I don't know.
John Adams.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
John Adams died
there we
first.
Go. Good. I was like, oh, please, I hope you have the answer.
You know,
but it was within hours, really.
Oh, really?
They finally, you know, one died probably mid-morning and then the other mid-afternoon, but it was within hours of each other on the 50th anniversary of July the 4th, yes.
Goodness. And then President James Monroe died on July 4th, 1831, becoming the third president in a row who died on that day. That's insanity.
That I did not know. So thank you for bringing that up.
This all happened underneath 10 years time, too. It's all like happened within that window.
Crazy.
Jeez.
That's some bad luck.
All right, moving right along. In 1802, the U.S. Military Academy officially opens at West Point, New York.
Oh. And in 1819, first savings bank in the U.S. opens its doors, and it was the Bank of Savings in New York City.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's lovely. Banks. Yay.
I used to work at a bank.
Oh, boy.
Fun fact. Yes, I don't want to.
1990 something.
This is why we're number one.
You
want to
talk about it? Is that what it was? Is that what you were going to say?
Well, no. I mean, it wasn't the Bank of Savings. It was a different bank that will go remain nameless. It was,
oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah. But then moving on, in 1831, America, My Country, 'Tis of Thee is first sung in Boston. And I think, do we have a little clip of that real fast? America. Oh, belt it out.
I hate to say this, but that's a different song.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I was like,
still a good one. Yeah, no, this is America the Beautiful. That's later on in the years.
Yes. It still works, and Ray Charles' version is great.
So
in, you know, moving along, 1836, Wisconsin Territory forms. Good for them. And
oh, good. In 1836, you know, it's always kind of interesting to think that these states haven't even been around for more than like 200 years. And
right. It's kind of weird to think.
You go to Sweden to the Museum of Failure and you see these buildings that have been up for like thousands of years.
Yeah.
And the fact that our country is still so new. We're just little babies. And it's just good to see, you know, that we're still celebrating independence after 200 years because who knows in another 200 years.
Almost 240.
Yeah.
41, I think.
We are young. We are spring chickens.
Having driven through Wisconsin just last week,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned the Wisconsin Territory being formed in what? Did you say 1836?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Did you know Wisconsin wasn't a state until 1848?
Really? How come?
I don't know.
Oh. But,
you know, Illinois is going to celebrate its 200th anniversary of statehood next year.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana became a state in 1816. But Wisconsin here, you know, the same Midwest area, was not a state or granted statehood until 1848. That just seemed later to me. I thought it would have been around, you know, 1820 or 1830 or something. But 1848, saw that on the Wisconsin state flag in Wisconsin.
Very nice.
So, wow.
Oh my gosh, I think the Packers won the Super Bowl the year after they were on this year. All right, in 1863, General Lee's army withdraws from Gettysburg. Oh, jeez, what a time. Time to be alive.
Yeah. Well, we weren't. None of us were alive. Nope. That would be insane.
Yeah.
1884, the Statue of Liberty presented to the U.S. in Paris. Now fundraising for the statue started in 1882, and we needed to get it here from Paris to the U.S. So did we start a Kickstarter?
Wait, so yeah, it was a gift? I thought it was always just gifted to us, but you're
right,
saying...
Right, but we have to get it over here.
So we needed to raise money to get it shipped over here.
And then it sat for a while.
Yeah, apparently shipping was not included in that gift.
So so when it came over here, it just sat in like a shipyard for a little bit?
It came in pieces.
Oh.
It came in pieces. And it sat for a while because they didn't have the money to put it together yet.
Right. Grover Cleveland, governor of New York, vetoed a bill to provide $50,000 for the statue project in 1884. They tried again next year to have Congress provide $100,000 to complete the project. That also failed. And the New York committee, with only $3,000 in the bank, suspended work on the pedestal. With the project in jeopardy, groups from other American cities, including Boston and Philadelphia, they offered to pay the full cost of erecting the statue in return for relocating it. Isn't that nice?
Wow, yeah. And then Joseph Pulitzer, the publisher of the New York World, the New York newspaper, announced that he would create the money of $100,000. And that's the equivalent of $2.3 million today to make this happen.
That's a lot of money.
No, good old Pulitzer always comes through.
Yeah.
Nice prize, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, by the way, this is adorable. A kindergarten class in Davenport, Iowa, mailed a gift of $1.35. And then after that, the Statue of Liberty made it to the States.
A whole $1.35.
I think that $1.35, they were still waiting. They're like, we just need $1.35. Who will give that to us?
Well, that...
Davenport, Iowa kindergartners.
They always come through. They always
they do.
Pulitzer and that small kindergarten group from Iowa. In 1895, Catherine Lee Bates publishes America the Beautiful. The first draft of America the Beautiful was actually hastily jotted down in a notebook during the summer of 1893.
See, there we go.
There's the song.
There we go.
Now we're... It's lovely.
It's always nice to hear this Ray Charles
version.
So,
yeah, apparently the hymn has been sung to several tunes, but the familiar one is by Samuel A. Ward, written for his hymn, Materna.
Mm.
Oh. I like this version.
Yeah, this is great. It's
this is a good one.
It's already good to hear a good friend of Ray. Big Finish.
Oh. Sing it, Ray.
Thank you so much. All right. In 1916, actually, this year marks the 100th year anniversary of Navy Pier.
Nice.
Our own Navy Pier, commissioned in 1916 as a part of the Burnham Plan. It was used for shipping and entertainment, but just a few years later, during World War I, the pier housed many of the Navy and some Army personnel, the Red Cross, the Home Defense Units, and it even had a jail for draft dodgers.
Oh, boy.
Good. Those draft dodgers need to be put in jail. We'll talk, to the folks from Navy Pier, I guess, earlier, a little bit later in the morning. I'm not sure. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But it is cool, the fact that we have Navy Pier here. And I love what they did to the Ferris wheel this year, too.
It's
gorgeous.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, all the
it's
things
that they've
added.
It's even bigger
now,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it bigger
it's
than
air
the
conditioned
one that was...
too. The things are air conditioned. I was like, what? They're like little homes.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a really cool
or
place.
They're completely enclosed now.
Mm-hmm.
Because when
yeah.
I was on it, once your feet were dangling and I was
oh, no,
down
no more.
Going, yeah.
No more. This is luxury now. At Navy Pier. But it's amazing. They have a lot of art exhibits. They have the Rolling Stones.
Yes, exhibitionism.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. going on over there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's still there, but there's some public art that you could get on. It was like a seesaw.
Ooh.
And it would play musical tunes. It had lights. So it's kind of neat. Oh, and they have that statue of, oh my gosh, what's his name? Bob Newhart, right?
Really?
Have you seen it? Yeah.
I have not.
It's like, it's him and then there's a couch.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That would be Bob Newhart.
Yeah, from the Newhart Show. It's always, I'm sure most people don't recognize it, honestly.
Have you seen
but I know it.
The Ferris wheel from Lakeshore Drive lit up at night?
Yes.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
It's so nice. It's kind of comforting.
It stands out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I find it comforting.
It's just
that
great.
You see it from the water, especially mm-hmm. when the water's so dark at night. Mm-hmm. It frightens me. In 1960, America's new 50-star flag honoring Hawaiian statehood unfurled. Executive order of President Eisenhower, dated August 21st, 1959, provided for the arrangement of the stars in nine rows of stars staggered horizontal, or staggered horizontally, and 11 rows of stars staggered vertically. And this is the current flag of the United States. Hawaii was admitted as the 50th state on August 21st, 1959. 27th flag of the United States became the official flag on July 4th, 1960.
So we Dave, could you fill us in? We had 27 flags before 1960. So they just kept making them over and over.
Well, they had to keep adding because they were adding states. And we had 48, I believe, New Mexico, either New Mexico or Arizona, in the early 20th century became the 47th and 48th states, respectively. And if you look at a flag from around the 1930s or around the time of World War II, the stars are all, you know, straight in, as Esmeralda was saying, you know, vertical and horizontal rows. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to stagger them because there was an even type of number. And when they became 50, you added two stars. So you had to stagger them, you know, when you have one row longer than the other.
Right.
I'm the only person in this station right now, I think, that can say I was born when there were 48 states.
Yes.
Oh, thanks for the reminder.
I'm going to agree. Is Roger still there? Maybe.
No, he just Roger was here when there were like 36. So.
Oh, well, there you go.
we were barely
listening. He's going to kill me now.
We were still under British rule at that time, I'm sure.
Well,
our good. Well, let's move right along. We needed to skip a few here, but I want to get to the good ones. In 1964, the Beach Boys.
What?
It's a whole
the
different
Beach Boys.
Band.
Totally different. Totally. They were big in the 40s, but not so much in the 60s.
Yeah.
It's a song by Elton John, isn't it?
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right, yeah. Well, they're not back, but the Beach Boys are. And I Get Around reached number one. 1964, and tell me if I'm wrong here, that's the 60s when it was like 64 to 69, some of the greatest music ever made.
I agree.
Yeah, ditto.
I agree.
And rolling right into that.
Yeah, 1970, Casey Kasem's American Top 40 debuts on the radio.
Oh.
And I'm sure they were playing I Get Around because it did reach, well, maybe not 64 to 70.
Yeah.
It was still number one in 1970.
Well, because they were putting all that good music there. Like, we need to have some kind of way to showcase it. All right, let's move on to 2009. The Statue of Liberty's crown finally reopened to the public after 8 years due to security reasons following the World Trade Center attacks. And that, I think, is the end of our This Is History segment. Dave, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Always fun.
Yes.
Always fun to talk to both of you.
Yes,
thank you.
Ditto.
And have a wonderful 4th of July weekend. Take time to be inspired.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. All right. So we're about to close out the show.
Yeah.
This has been so much fun.
I love
the fact that we got to stay in for Dave Plyer tonight.
I know. And again, thank you, Dave Plyer, for being on vacation.
What are you folks doing for the 4th?
I am going to be here.
Okay.
Working,
well, I'll
just
see
like you.
I'll
yeah.
see you again.
We'll be vacation buddies.
Yeah.
In a way.
Quite often the case.
Time off, buddies.
Now, there is a holiday tradition here. Dave Plyer and myself usually work the mornings in for Steve and Andrea and the morning crew. I think Andy Mazur is going to join us again for sports.
Very good.
Tuesday morning. And then tomorrow, I think it's Pete and Jane.
Yes.
So
I believe so. Very cool.
We have all your fun times here at WGN Radio for the next few days, so just make sure you tune in. Thank you again, Dave. Thank you again, Camille, Esmeralda, everybody. We're going to come back after this quick break with Walter Jacobson's perspective and a little bit more of saying goodbye. All right, so we'll take a quick break here on WGN Radio. Hey, welcome back to WGN Radio. This is Michael and Esmeralda. Esmeralda, this has been such a cool experience.
Yeah, no, completely, because we don't intermingle that much because you're produced. We're kind of behind the scenes, sort of.
Yeah,
we produce, or you produce, and then I do traffic, so we don't get to be at the big boy chair.
And a little bit exactly.
As I call it, the grown-up chair.
We're often collected in these glass boxes because you work upstairs in the seventh floor, and then I work down here in the first floor here, and we can see each other on the TV screens.
Yeah, at least I have a box on the TV. You kind of don't.
I don't?
Good. No.
I want no one to know what I'm doing.
You can kind of see you, but not really.
Okay.
So I do. Yeah, I do. I live in a box.
Yeah, but I often see you in a very, very small portion. So it's good to see you actually right here.
In real life.
In real life.
I exist. IRL. Mm-hmm. I'm actually real.
And getting to fill in for Dave Plyer, what a great host and great person in general. So we're happy to be here with Dave. And there's somebody else that we get to speak to, and that's our great friend Walter Jacobson, who has his perspective coming up. And what do you say we hear from him right now?
Absolutely. You're listening to 720 WGN. I'm Esmeralda Leon.
And this is Michael Heidemann.
Michael Heidemann. And we are done.
Oh,
it's
no.
Either good
already?
Or bad for some people. I am sad.
Yes.
I don't know about you.
I'm sad, but you know what? I'm very happy that we had a great show. And
it was wonderful.
It's the 4th of July weekend. Hope everyone has an amazing weekend. Thank you, Camille. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you to all our guests. Yes.
Lots of fun,
great 4th of July.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you.